Today is Monday, February 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up.
Now is the time for Congress to show the world that America is committed to ending illegal immigration and putting the ruthless coyotes, cartels, drug dealers, and human traffickers out of business.
Also ahead, Islamic State militants use civilians as human shields in fighting. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S.-backed coalition forces in Syria have launched an offensive to remove Islamic State militants from their last stronghold close to the border with Iraq. But their advance is halted by the exodus of civilians from the area. Fighters also say the militants are putting up fierce resistance to their advance. VOA's Zlata Sahok reports.
Thousands of civilians have fled the militant-held enclave in eastern Syria ahead of the coalition offensive that began last week. Among them are members of Islamic State families, including this young widow.
I came here without knowledge, and knowledge is very important in Islam. And I didn't regret because this makes me experience to be strong and to be mother and to be very strong.
Observers say more than 20,000 people so far have fled the area comprised of two villages on the border with Iraq, and smaller groups were still trickling out from the village of Bahuz on Sunday. The arrivals undergo an initial security check outside Bahuz to separate civilians from Islamic State members. Civilians are then moved to a displacement camp outside the fighting zone. A man from Ireland has been detained as suspected jihadist.
We thought the more kids we will have, maybe we'll have the more women and kids. If you go as a big group, it will be less dangerous. Maybe they're not, because they would see so many people, and especially with the kids crying, maybe they would not harm us.
Many people fleeing the area are foreigners. Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces say militants are increasingly using civilians as human shields to block their advance. Islamic State fighters are putting up fierce resistance in the village of Bahuz, their final holdout in eastern Syria. Islamic State once controlled large swaths of Iraq and Syria, but its self-proclaimed caliphate has been dismantled through a concerted international effort in the past few years. The extremist group still holds small pockets of land in both countries and is capable of inflicting heavy casualties on the attacking forces. Zlata Sahok, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Zlatissa. Well, the acting U.S. Secretary of Defense made an unannounced visit today to Afghanistan, where he says he has not received orders to withdraw American troops. The visit comes as the U.S. continues peace negotiations with the Taliban to end nearly two decades of war there. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has details.
Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan told reporters before his unannounced stop in Kabul, the United States is not discussing any size troop withdrawal.
I have not been directed to step down our forces in Afghanistan. The direction, and this is in close coordination with Secretary Pompeo and Ambassador Bolton, is to support Ambassador Khalilzad and these peace negotiations.
Last week, during the State of the Union address, President Donald Trump slammed U.S. involvement in prolonged conflicts.
Great nations do not fight endless wars.
He also praised peace talks with the Taliban, seeing them as a way to bring American troops home from Afghanistan.
As we make progress in these negotiations, we will be able to reduce our troops' presence and focus on counterterrorism, and we will indeed focus on counterterrorism. We do not know whether we'll achieve an agreement, but we do know that after two decades of war, the hour has come to at least try for peace.
Shanahan said Monday the United States would determine the size of its troop presence in Afghanistan in a coordinated and disciplined manner. He added that the presence would continue to defend the American homeland while supporting regional stability.
The U.S. has significant, significant investment in ensuring security. But the Afghans decide their future.
Afghan President Ashraf Ghani's government has not participated in ongoing talks between U.S. envoy Zalmay Khalilzad and the Taliban. Khalilzad and his team are due to meet with the Taliban again February 25th in Qatar. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Among the top stories in the world, Britain's opposition Labour Party, in conjunction with conservative rebels, plan to seize control of Brexit negotiations this week. And nearly 100 people have died in northern India after drinking tainted bootleg liquor. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
U.S. Geological Survey says 71% of the Earth's surface is covered with water. A couple of recent studies have also suggested that there are oceans of water deep inside our planet's mantle. Scientists suggest after its formation about 4.53 billion years ago, Earth was a dry, hot, and molten planet. A heavy bombardment of water and ice-bearing asteroids and comets several million to a billion years later provided the supply of H2O we rely on today. Now, research by a team of geoscientists from Arizona State University proposes another source of Earth's water they say has been overlooked. The sun and planets were formed from a large cloud of gas and dust containing an abundant supply of hydrogen. The study suggests a combination of all that hydrogen, along with Earth's rocky materials, could be the origin of most of our planet's water. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump blamed opposition Democrats today for the stalled talks over immigration policies at the White House as lawmakers struggle to avert another partial government shutdown. The stalled talks come as Trump is set to travel to the border at El Paso, Texas, for a rally today to focus on the wall he says would thwart people from illegally entering the U.S. from Mexico. Catherine Gibson reports from Capitol Hill in Washington.
Stalled traffic at airports, shuttered museums, and unpaid government workers. Scenes from a partial government shutdown that could be repeated if the president and Congress don't reach a deal on his demand for a border wall.
Now is the time for Congress to show the world that America is committed to ending illegal immigration and putting the ruthless coyotes, cartels, drug dealers, and human traffickers out of business.
The president agreed to fund the government for three additional weeks until February 15th, giving a bipartisan committee of lawmakers time to find a compromise. Any deal would have to pass a Democrat-majority House of Representatives and still have the president's signature.
I don't expect much coming out of the committee because I keep hearing the words that we'll give you what you want, but we're not going to give you a wall. And the problem is, if they don't give us a wall, it doesn't work.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has signaled she may be willing to support funding for some border fencing, the latest technology, and more personnel at ports of entry. But Democrats are standing united against funding for the wall Trump supporters want, and the president has repeatedly promised since the days of his presidential campaign. President Trump could accept a compromise to avoid the unpopular options of shutting down the government again or declaring a national emergency at the border to secure funding for a wall. Many Republicans do not want to see him take that route, since the declaration would likely trigger court battles over his use of presidential authority. But with a looming 2020 presidential contest, both Democrats and Republicans are aware the political cost of giving in to the other side. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Indonesia's proposed sexual violence law is facing opposition from conservative groups, putting its passage in doubt. Supporters of the legislation say it would be the first legal basis for cases of sexual abuse in the country. Critics say the proposed law would encourage premarital sex and prostitution. One faction in the House of Representatives, the Islamic-oriented Prosperous Justice Party, PKS, has rejected the bill. However, two of the biggest parties in the legislature, the Indonesian Democratic Party of Struggles, PDIP, and Gerindra Party, support the bill. The law is considered by supporters to be a legal breakthrough for Indonesian women over the current criminal code in Indonesia. Well, the UN Refugee Agency says it is worried by reports of people fleeing escalating violence in Myanmar's southern Chin State and Rakhine State, adding to growing instability in these regions. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency says it cannot assess the scale of the current humanitarian situation in these volatile areas because it has little access to these and other regions in Myanmar. But the UNHCR says reports it has received of the deteriorating security situation in southern Chin State and Rakhine State are very worrying. It says it does not know how many people have fled their homes and have become internally displaced since violence flared up there in December. Additionally, in Rakhine State, UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahecic says a number of Rohingya Muslims have fled to Bangladesh in search of asylum.
We understand from some of the reports that some 200 people have sought shelter, have sought safety. This is reportedly in a very remote area where we don't really have access.
More than 720,000 Rohingya refugees have fled to Bangladesh since August 2017 to escape persecution and violence in Myanmar. Because of previous refugee crises in Myanmar, Bangladesh currently is home to nearly 1 million Rohingya refugees. The UNHCR praises the country's generosity and appeals to the authorities to continue to allow people fleeing violence in Myanmar to seek safety in Bangladesh. Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, is a predominantly Buddhist country. It has a long history of tension with its ethnic minorities, much of it based on religion. Southern Chin State is the only state in Myanmar with a Christian majority. It also is the poorest and least developed region in the country. The large Rohingya Muslim population in Rakhine State continues to suffer discrimination and repression from the majority Buddhist community. Though they have lived in Myanmar for generations, the Rohingya are denied citizenship and remain stateless. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. Well, hundreds of thousands of Iranians gather today to mark the 40th anniversary of the country's Islamic Revolution. The events commemorate the collapse of the government of Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi after the Ayatollah Khomeini's return from exile in 1979. Monday's demonstrations included chants and banners declaring death to America and death to Israel. President Hassan Rouhani told a crowd in Tehran that Iran's enemies will not achieve what he called their evil goals. He said that while Iran will continue to have constructive engagement with the international community, it will not ask for permission to produce any type of missile it wants. The country's military also displayed weapons. Tasman News Agency showed pictures of Iranian-made ballistic missiles in a parade marking the anniversary. This is VOA's International Edition.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we'll discuss measles as countries such as Madagascar and the United States are grappling with the disease. For your questions or comments, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Australia is installing renewable energy facilities at a faster rate than any other country. Some research suggests Australia is on track to meet its Paris climate commitments 5 years earlier than expected in 2025. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Australia is enjoying a green energy revolution. It's installing renewable energy facilities faster than anywhere else. And research shows Australia is on track to meet its Paris climate commitments 5 years early. The agreement reached in the French capital in 2016 stressed the need for global action to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Academics say at the current rate, Australia can expect to be 100% powered by green sources within a decade and a half. Andrew Blakers is a professor of engineering at the Australian National University.
Currently above 20% renewable electricity. At this rate, we're going to get to 50% in 2024 and 100% in about 2032 if we just keep doing exactly what we're doing now. This is 4 or 5 times faster per capita than the United States, China, Japan, or the European Union.
The research from the Australian National University contrasts previous studies, which found Australia isn't on track to meet its obligations under the Paris Agreement. The 2018 Emissions Gap Report from the United Nations listed Australia as a G20 country that won't meet its 2030 emission reduction target. There is broad agreement, however, that renewable energy has an increasingly important part to play in Australia. It's a sunny and windy place. It has a range of renewable power sources, including solar, wind, hydro, and geothermal energy, which taps heat in the earth. It has a growing rooftop solar industry. At the end of last year, more than 2 million Australian homes had rooftop solar systems. Renewable energy will help to cut emissions in Australia, which still uses coal to generate much of its electricity. Recent extreme conditions in Australia have again focused attention on the impact of climate change. January was the hottest month ever documented, and 2018 was the third warmest year on record. The Bureau of Meteorology says that while it can't attribute individual heat waves to climate change, it states that as the planet warms, bursts of extreme heat will become more frequent and intense. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Thank you, Phil. Well, a joint study by the International Labour Organization and UN Children's Fund finds the vast majority of the world's children lack effective social protection coverage. It says this dooms them to a life of extreme poverty with negative implications for society. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The study finds only one-third of children between 0 and 14 years of age have any social protection. That means two-thirds, or 1.3 billion children, live without a social safety net. International Labour Organization's Social Protection Department Director Isabel Ortiz says just slightly more than 1% of GDP is allocated to social protection for children. She says this huge underinvestment gap needs to be covered.
And of course, the numbers worsen as we go by region. In Africa, for instance, children represent 40% of the African population as overall, and however, only 0.6% is actually invested in social protection for children.
The report finds children fare best in Europe and Central Asia, where 87% have social protection coverage, followed by children in the Americas with 66%. Asia and Africa have the worst records. The report says no data is available on the Arab states. The report highlights the impact extreme poverty has upon the lives of children and the societies in which they live. Chief of the UN Children's Fund Child Poverty and Social Protection Unit, David Stewart, says 385 million children are living on under $1.90 a day.
I think one of the most striking statistics which emerges is that children are two times as likely to be living in poverty as adults. Now, for children, it is particularly concerning because poverty can have a lifetime implication for children. You know, you don't have a second chance at nutrition, at healthcare, and education.
Stewart says this has negative implications for children and for societies and economies as well. The ILO and UNICEF recommend the rapid expansion of social protection for children, including the consideration of universal cash grants to children. Authors of the report say evidence clearly shows cash transfers play a vital role in breaking the vicious cycle of poverty and vulnerability. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Well, this year's Grammy Awards in Los Angeles yesterday seemed to be all about women. The Music Awards in Los Angeles began with a surprise appearance by Michelle Obama, along with Jennifer Lopez, Lady Gaga, Jada Pinkett Smith, and Alicia Keys. The former First Lady told the audience what music meant to her. Music helps us share ourselves, our dignity, and our sorrows, our hopes and joys, she said. Dua Lipa earned Best New Artist Prize.
I guess where I want to begin is by saying how honored I am to be nominated alongside so many incredible female artists this year, because I guess this year we've really stepped up.
The brash Cardi B was in tears when she accepted the Grammy for Best Rap Album for her Invasion of Privacy. It was the first time a woman has won the category. Lady Gaga won Best Pop Solo for Joanne, Where Do You Think You're Going? Also, Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper won Best Pop Duo Group Performance for Shallow from the movie A Star Is Born. This year, the Grammys honor two legendary American music icons, Diana Ross and Dolly Parton. Ross sang several of her songs, some of them as she walked through the audience. Later, during her performance, Ross said, "Thank you for being here and celebrating my 75th birthday." And Ariana Grande won Best Pop Vocal Album for Sweetener. Grande was not in attendance, however, after a public disagreement with the show's producer. Ariana Grande. Well, you've been listening to International Edition, and thanks for joining us. And thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, John Dryden. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss latest efforts to sustain the Global Fund to fight AIDS, TB, and malaria, the largest global partnership addressing the three diseases. Our guest is Elizabeth Ivanovich, Director for Global Health at the UN Foundation. For your questions or comments, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.